Welcome to our deep dive into the world of family law. We'll be focusing on a Missouri Court of Appeals case, Abbott v. Perez.
Yeah, this case is really a fascinating look at how courts handle a tough situation, trying to weigh someone's future earning potential against what they're actually making right now.
Exactly. And especially, you see this a lot in fields like medicine, where you have residencies and it's like a huge difference between like what you're making then and what you can make later.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're talking about Dr. Robert Abbott. He's a plastic surgery resident. And his ex-wife, Dr. Teresa Perez, who's a dentist.
Right, right.
And their divorce, I mean, it wasn't just your typical, you know, he said, she said. It brought up some pretty interesting questions, you know, about child custody, support payments, and how those future earnings we were just talking about really play into the picture.
Yeah, it really highlights how courts have to balance these things, especially when one spouse, you know, they're on track to make serious money, but they're just not there yet.
Right. You're thinking, you know, they're slogging through med school, maybe racking up a ton of debt, and then residency. It barely covers the bills.
Barely, yeah.
Yet the courts still have to figure out child support and all that and try to be fair to both sides.
Right. And that's where things get kind of tricky. Can you really base financial decisions on what someone might make years down the line? Like, that's the whole question the court was wrestling with in Abbott v. Perez.
Definitely. Before we get too deep into the legal stuff, let's set the scene a bit. What was going on with Dr. Abbott and Dr. Perez? What was their backstory?
Well, their marriage was, let's just say it was rocky. There were documented cases of abuse. And then on top of that, you've got Dr. Abbott's residency schedule.
Oh, right.
Incredibly demanding.
Working crazy hours.
Oh, yeah.
Which I can only imagine puts a strain on any relationship.
Of course.
Let alone one that's already struggling.
Yeah, definitely. And it also meant that Dr. Perez, she ended up being the primary caregiver for their child. And the trial court really focused on that, you know, when they were making the custody decision.
So how did the trial court handle the custody issue? I mean, given all that was going on.
So they awarded sole legal and primary physical custody to Dr. Perez. Dr. Abbott, he was granted temporary custody and visitation rights, you know, based on a set parenting plan. And the court, they zeroed in on his unpredictable schedule as a major factor in deciding what was in the best interest of the child.
It sounds like they weren't necessarily trying to punish Dr. Abbott, but more they were trying to prioritize the child's stability.
Exactly, exactly. They actually explicitly said, you know, it's not about punishing either parent. It's about making sure the needs of the child come first.
Okay, so let's get to the, you know, the money part of the case.
Yeah.
This is what really got people talking, especially that whole retroactive child support issue.
Yeah.
Can you break that down for us?
$945 a month in child support. And this was retroactive to when the divorce was filed. And here's where it gets interesting. They based this on him making like $200,000 a year during his residency.
Yeah, hold on. He was making a resident salary.
Yeah.
Which I'm assuming was nowhere near $200,000.
Oh, you're right. He was making closer to $50,000 a year.
Wow. That's a big difference.
Huge. And that's where the appellate court stepped in. They said, you can't punish someone for money they haven't even earned yet.
So they really drew a line between potential future earnings and like what someone's actual ability to pay is at this moment.
Exactly. And that's such an important distinction for anyone going through a divorce, you know, or even dealing with family law cases in general. Retroactive support, you know, it's supposed to cover past expenses. It has to be based on what someone was actually making during that time.
You can't just be like, oh, well, someday there'll be a high-powered surgeon, so let's make them pay based on that.
Right.
It has to be grounded in what their actual income was at the time.
Exactly. That's where the trial court, they overstepped and the appellate court corrected it. They said it's like making a law student pay child support based on what they might earn as a partner someday.
That's a great example. So what about future child support payments? Did the appellate court get rid of those too?
No, not at all. They were totally fine with prospective child support orders. They understood that, you know, once Dr. Abbott finishes residency and he actually becomes a licensed plastic surgeon, his income, that's likely going to change.
Right.
So it was reasonable to consider, you know, that higher earning potential when they're setting up, you know, future support obligations.
So it's all about the timing.
Yeah.
Retroactive support, you're looking at the actual income.
Mm-hmm.
Prospective support, okay, now you can think about that future earning capacity.
Precisely. And it highlights the different standards courts use, you know, for these kinds of support orders. And what's interesting about this case is that you really get to see those standards in action.
Okay, so the appellate court said no to the retroactive support, but they were okay with the prospective support. What about all the other financial stuff? The debts, attorney's fees, all that?
Right. So the trial court also ordered them to, you know, split the debt equally.
Okay.
Which is pretty standard in divorces.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And they also ordered Dr. Abbott to pay $16,000 of Dr. Perez's attorney's fees.
Okay, so it sounds like they were going for a, you know, financially even split, considering everything.
Yes, but here's the thing. That mistake with the retroactive child support, it kind of messed up the whole financial picture. The appellate court said because of that error, it's hard to tell if the overall division of assets and debts was actually fair.
It's like that one error just had this domino effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Like everything else.
You can't just isolate financial aspects in a divorce. It's all connected. And that's something the appellate court really emphasized.
It's fascinating stuff. But I have to admit, all these legal terms and standards can be a little overwhelming. So how did the appellate court actually get to its decision? What were they looking for when they reviewed the trial court's judgment?
Yeah, you're right. It can get a bit dense, but this is important for understanding how appeals work, especially in family law. And the key phrase here is abuse of discretion.
Abuse of discretion? What does that even mean?
Okay, so basically the appellate court, they're looking for evidence that the trial court just made a major error in judgment. It's not enough for them to just disagree with the decision. They have to find that the ruling was completely unreasonable.
So they're not just second guessing. They're looking for like a serious mistake.
Right. A serious mistake. And in Abbott v. Perez, the court found that the trial court did abuse its discretion with the retroactive child support, but not necessarily with the other financial decisions.
Okay.
They said, yeah, trial courts have some wiggle room.
Some leeway.
But there are limits.
Right.
And this is a good example of where they cross the line.
This case really highlights how important it is to understand how this appeals process works, especially for lawyers, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're handling family law cases.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's another key takeaway for attorneys here. If you're going to challenge a trial court's decision on appeal, you can't just say, hey, this is unfair.
Right.
You need to show exactly where the trial court messed up. You need hard evidence to support your argument, not just feelings.
So Dr. Abbott's legal team, they really had to bring it to challenge that support order.
They did, and they were smart about it. They focused on the fact that the trial court didn't really have any evidence to back up that $200,000 income figure. So they brought in his residency contract, his pay stubs, all the proof that showed, you know, he just wasn't making that kind of money.
So it's all about building a strong case with solid evidence. Not just assumptions and hypotheticals.
You got it.
Especially when it comes to financial matters.
Especially
this is a lot to think about. But I kind of want to dig a little deeper into the custody aspect of this, especially how the court handled Dr. Abbott's visitation schedule. Do you think the court was fair to him in that situation?
That's a great question, and it's one that often gets overlooked. It brings up some interesting points about how courts balance a child's needs with a parent's job. Especially in fields like medicine. We should unpack that a little further.
Yes, let's.
Yeah, so the trial court, they didn't just stop at awarding sole custody to Dr. Perez. They also included some very specific conditions on Dr. Abbott's visitation, especially as the child got older.
I see how that can be kind of controversial, like saying you need to be a better parent and maybe you'll get more time later on.
Well, it's a bit more nuanced than that. You have to remember, the court's always thinking, what's best for this kid, first and foremost. And in this case, they saw that, okay, as this child gets older, their needs are going to change, so the parenting plan should change too.
So it's not so much about punishing Dr. Abbott. It's about realizing a kid's needs evolve as they grow up.
Exactly. Exactly. And they even said this parenting plan, it can be modified down the road based on, you know, how those needs change and how the parent situations change. And honestly, that's pretty common, that flexibility, especially when you've got one parent, like Dr. Abbott, with a demanding job that might limit their time.
So it's like planning ahead. Not a punishment.
I like that. Yeah. It's about setting things up so they can adapt as the kid grows and everyone's lives change.
This case is really a window into how family courts operate, what they look at, you know,
yeah.
When they're making these huge decisions that impact people's lives.
It really is. And it also shows why having a good lawyer is so important in these cases, because like we've seen, the details matter. How you present evidence, the arguments you make, the legal stuff you cite can all really affect the outcome.
Speaking of legal strategy, let's get back to the appeals process for a minute. We talked about how they overturned that retroactive child support, but Dr. Abbott also challenged the custody, right? Did he win on that one?
That's where things get even more interesting. Remember that abuse of discretion standard. to fight the custody decision, Dr. Abbott's lawyers, they had to meet that same high bar.
Right.
They had to prove the trial court's ruling wasn't just wrong, it was totally off base.
So even if they felt the custody arrangement was bad, that wasn't enough.
Nope. They needed real proof to say the trial court just ignored important facts or totally messed up how the law applies.
So did they do that?
On the custody, no, they came up short. The appellate court stuck with the original decision. They said there wasn't enough evidence to say the arrangement was, like, unreasonable or harmful to the child.
So Dr. Abbott wins big on the money side, but the custody stays put.
That's it. And it shows appeals, they're not all or nothing. You can win some, lose some. Honestly, it's rare to get a complete do-over on every issue. Appeal courts, a lot of times, they'll keep some of the trial court's judgment and overturn other parts. It all depends on the specifics of the case, you know, what arguments are made.
It's not just like an on-off switch. It's more like a dimmer. You can tweak things.
Oh, perfect analogy. And in this case, Dr. Abbott's lawyers, they played it smart. They knew that retroactive support argument was strong.
Uh-huh.
So they put their energy into, like, dismantling that part of the judgment. And it worked.
Sounds like picking your battles is key in court and, well, life in general.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's better to, you know, give a little to get the bigger win.
So we've covered the custody, all the financial stuff, how appeals work. But I think the big question for people is, what does all this mean for them? What are the big lessons from Abbott v. Perez?
That's the million-dollar question. Because, you know, these court cases, they're not just ideas. They have real effects on folks going through similar things. And there are takeaways here.
Definitely. Definitely. So break it down for us. What should people keep in mind, especially if they're going through divorce or dealing with family law issues?
The number one thing is courts are putting the kid first. Always. That's what drives custody decisions. And parents got to remember that.
So even if things get messy and emotional, it's not about beating your ex.
Right.
It's about that kid having stability, a good environment, even if it means compromise with the other parent.
100%. It's about setting feelings aside and saying, what's best for this child?
And the second thing, I think, is being real about money. We saw how that retroactive support got shot down because it wasn't based on Dr. Abbott's real income. So what's your advice there?
If you're the one paying support, show your finances, be clear, be honest. And if you're on the receiving end, be reasonable. Look at what the other person actually makes. Don't base things on what they might make someday.
Don't count your chickens before they hatch.
Right. Facts and evidence matter. And that brings up point number three. A good lawyer is worth it.
Which we've seen throughout this whole case. Dr. Abbott's team was smart.
Very smart.
They knew how to challenge some things, let others slide. They presented their case well.
Yeah, and that's why if you've got a complicated legal problem, don't go it alone. A good lawyer is your guide. They'll fight for you. They know how the system works.
It's a lot about being prepared and understanding the law, it seems.
You got it. Knowledge is power, especially in legal stuff.
We've covered a ton today, but something feels missing. We did the best interest of the child, the money calculations, how to fight an appeal. But this case raises another question that it doesn't quite answer.
You're right. There's another layer here, something that goes beyond just Dr. Abbott and Dr. Perez. It's something courts all over are dealing with, and it affects how we think about family law now.
Okay, now I'm intrigued. What's this bigger question? Okay, so what is this big question that Abbott v. Perez raises but doesn't really answer?
Well, it comes down to this. How should courts handle these cases where one parent is on a career path that's, you know, it's going to lead to big earnings later on, but right now they're really struggling financially? Like, think about those med school residents or maybe a PhD student who's just starting out.
Yeah, so it's that tension between what someone could earn versus what their bank account actually looks like at the moment, which played a big role in that whole retroactive child support thing.
Exactly. And Abbott v. Perez, it gives us some guidelines, but it's not like a perfect solution. The court basically said, look, you can't punish someone for income they haven't actually made yet. But then they also said, yeah, future earning capacity, that's something you can definitely think about when you're setting support payments that are going forward.
So it's like we're in this kind of gray area where courts are still figuring out how to balance those two things.
Exactly. And it's not just about being fair to the parent who's going to be paying the support. It's also about making sure the child's needs are met, you know, now and in the future.
Right. Because if the court sets the support too low during those tough training years, the kid could really miss out.
Right.
But if they set it too high based on that future potential, well, it could end up hurting everyone financially.
That's the dilemma. It's a tough one. There's no easy answer, no formula. It really depends on the individual case and the specific circumstances, and of course, what's best for the child.
So there's no one-size-fits-all answer.
Nope.
Which I imagine can be really frustrating for families who are going through this.
It can be. And, you know, while it makes sense to look at each case individually, it also means there's room for different courts to interpret things differently, maybe even inconsistently.
It almost sounds like a big legal puzzle that we haven't quite solved yet.
That's a great way to put it. And it really highlights why it's so important to have these discussions, maybe even think about some changes in the law itself, just to give clearer guidelines to the courts and the families who are dealing with all this.
Yeah. And it really makes you realize how important it is to have a good lawyer.
Oh, definitely.
In these cases. Someone who gets all these nuances and can fight for you in your specific situation.
Absolutely. Having a skilled lawyer, it can make all the difference in navigating this stuff, hopefully leading to an outcome that's fair for everyone.
Well, we started out talking about Abbott v. Perez, and it seemed like a pretty straightforward divorce case. But, you know, we've ended up exploring this much bigger issue that affects families all over.
That's what I love about the law. These individual cases, they can spark these bigger conversations and show us the challenges that our legal system is still trying to figure out. Abbott v. Perez might not have all the answers, but it definitely points to a really important question that we as a society need to keep talking about.
So for our listeners out there, especially those who might be going through something similar, what's the big takeaway from all of this?
When it comes to family law, there are very rarely easy answers. These are really emotional situations with high stakes, and they require a lot of careful thought, good legal advice, and a real commitment to putting the best interests of everyone first, especially the children.
Great advice. And on that note, that's a wrap for our deep dive into Abbott v. Perez. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with another fascinating case soon, breaking down these complex legal issues and what they mean for you. Until then, stay curious.